the mother comes and envelops him, and of course she knows what he is going to ask, and she tells him, don't ask that. Humanity is not ready. Don't ask that. All that you have won, it is yours, nobody can take it away from you. But don't ask for anything more. And then she gives her long explanation of why it's not time yet, that she can't grant what his heart is longing for. It's this long description of our human state. And I don't know. Yes, she asks him to wait. No, she says, don't leave. I'm not asking you to leave. I'm not asking you to merge with the origin. No, I know you have been born to partake in the mission of the universe, and you should not leave the light to die that the ages have been carrying. Your spirit's urge, it is to uplift the world. It's leaned down, it's been a witness to God's parley, God's conversation with the night of the inconscience, and it has leaned compassionate from immortal calm. It has come down to earth in order to help. So she says, don't stop, continue, and my light will be with me, with thee, my strength, thy force. Only ask one boon to greaten your spirit. Only desire one joy to raise your kind, your species. And you leave everything else to the high, unchanging will. And she promises him, all things shall change in God's transfiguring hour. So we would think that is the end of it. But Asvapati argues with her. He says, how can I do that? How can I rest content with mortal days now that I have seen you? And what about all the rest of us? How long has it got to go on? Why don't we see some sign of you? Why is it all taking so long? But he says, I know that your creation is not going to fail, because I've had this marvelous vision. I've seen this dance of Shiva, this destruction of the way things are, and the coming of the immortals, pioneers, these new beings whose tread is going to justify everything. No. This high divine successor, I know he's going to come, and he will take up the work. But then he addresses her, very beautiful, we must look at these lines in detail later on, how he addresses her, but he tells her, please incarnate your force, mission to earth, some living form of yourself. And let all your powers be in her, your eternity, your infinity, your all knowledge, your all love, your beauty, all heaven's beauty, crowd in earthly limbs. And you who are omnipotent, you girdle, you strengthen with the power of God movements and moments of a mortal will. let a great word be spoken from the heights, and one great act unlock the doors of fate. So he is, after all, voicing his aspiration in another way. And when he's finished speaking, it's as if all the resistance in the universe just swallows up his prayer. But there does come this wide consenting voice, and the mother says, yes, one shall descend and break the iron law. And she gives a wonderful description of what that being is going to be like. This is her promise. And it's because of this promise of hers that Savitri will be born. And then she disappears. There's a sense of emptiness. And then suddenly the wave of life comes flowing in, and suddenly the grandiose respite failed, the wide release, and he finds himself hurtling back to earth, his soul drawing back into the speed and noise of the vast business of created things. And there he has to take up his duties as a king. He has to take up the reins again, resume his mighty rounds. And this little field, this scant field of the ambiguous globe, our earth, after all his great achievements, he has to come back and be human on earth and do his work here. So this is the powerful end to part one of the poem. There are three parts altogether. So we have a little time. We can go back to the beginning of the canto and read about the coming of the mother. Jocelyn, what do you read?
Then for the name there rose a sacred stir. Amid the lifeless silence of the void, in the solitude and immensity, the sound came, quivering like a cloud to fall, heard in the listening space of the whistle. At that, the curves of his fire would be light. And his ears had caught the mortal wrench. The boundless heart was near his longing heart, the mystic form enveloped his earthly shape.
Thank you. Some movement in that emptiness. And then there's the sound of a footstep, a familiar sound of a loved footstep, heard by the soul. And then there's a touch, his fibers, the body itself is touched with this delight. So there's an influence has come very near to the human range. A heart was near his longing heart, so kind of second stage, and then the mystic form enveloped his earthly shape. He's possessed by or taken into the form of the mother. That's the first painting of this canto. It's clear. This word perturbed. Yeah. Sometimes when we feel delight, it's disturbing, no? Troubling a little bit, because we're not used to that intensity.
Something distracts you.
Perturbs you, troubles you. This to the, to. It's a sudden thrill, which is both pleasurable and challenging. Antim, you'll go on.
All at her contact broke from silent sea. Spirit and body thrilled, identified, linked in the grasp of an unspoken joy. Mind, members, life, were merged in ecstasy. Intoxicated as with a nectarous rain, his nature's passioning stretches flowed to her, flashing with lightnings, mad with luminous wine. All was a limitless sea that heaved to the moon. A divinizing stream possessed his veins. His body's cells awoke to spirit sense. Each nerve became a burning thread of joy. Tissue and flesh partook beatitude.
Thank you. It's clear. Anything to ask?
Yes, a question, Chamberlain. This part is surrender to Aswapati, to the Divine Mother?
Well, he'd already surrendered. This is where she really comes, and first of all, she envelops him. And then she's really in him. And what is the effect this has on his whole being? Everything, no? Yeah. Is thrilled, identified, become his whole being becomes unified, no? It had been silent, receptive, but now it feels the contact, no? So the spirit and the body are linked in this joy, this intense delight of the mother's touch, and the mind and the body and the life, they're all merged in one ecstasy. And then there's this wonderful lines. Everything in him is flowing towards her. Mad with luminous wine, it's in a state of intoxication. Everything in him is like an ocean lifting up, adoring the moon. And in his veins, he can feel a divinizing stream flowing through the veins. The cells wake up with spirit sense, not their normal natural sense, spirit sense. And every nerve becomes a burning thread of joy. So the body, tissue and flesh, is experiencing beatitude, bliss.
That's a beautiful
line. Even lost in slumber, mute. A light, yes. A light, the dun, unplumbed, subconscient caves, thrilled with the prescience of her longed-for tread, and filled with flickering crests and praying tongues. even lost in slumber, mute, inanimate, his very body answered to her power. The one he worshipped was within him now. Flame pure, ethereal tressed, a mighty face appeared, and lips moved by immortal words. Lids, wisdom's leaves, drooped over rapture's orbs. A marble monument of ponderings shone a forehead, sights crypt, and large like ocean's gaze towards heaven, two tranquil eyes of boundless thought looked into man's and saw the God to come. So there are these subconscious caves. They are colorless, bottomless, but they respond. They respond. They have the feeling that she is going to put her feet in them or on them. They have the prescience of foreknowledge that the mothers, they'll be touched by the mother's feet. And so they fill with flickering crests. Fires light up in those caves, fires of aspiration and prayer. And then there are these two lines which are mysterious to me, because he has spoken about tissue and flesh and nerves and veins and all the rest of it. But now he says his very body answered to her power. So I suppose perhaps it means the most material part of the body that's lost in slumber, more or less completely unconscious, silent, inanimate, not living. His very body answered to her power. And now she's within him, and he sees her within him, this wonderful face, flame pure, ethereal tressed. Your tresses are your hair. So there is hair, but it is ethereal, it's very, very fine and subtle. It's not like human hair.
It's long, usually, not tress.
A tress would be long, yes. And her eyes look into his eyes, but they are man's eyes, so looked into Asvapati's eyes as a representative of humanity. She sees there not only his individual divinity, but the divinity that's going to belong to humanity as a whole. We can stop there for today and continue next week.
an influence had approached the mortal age. A boundless heart was near his longing heart, a mystic form enveloped his earthly shape. Appeared and lips moved by immortal.